diverse counties of the country.
Well, I had a colleague, she was on the panel with me, and she didn't realize that San Diego was the size of the state of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I didn't realize
in
that.
In terms of its population.
Okay, let's get started. Good morning. Welcome to the APHA session, The Future of Health Administration Through the Eyes of Higher Education. This session was organized by the Health Administration Section, celebrating their 100th anniversary this year. My name is April Fernandez, and I will be moderating this hour and a half session. This is a panel discussion where we'll begin with an introductory presentation by John Lloyd and follow with some questions for our panelists. Afterwards, we'll open the discussion for anyone in the room to ask questions. I'd first like to introduce our panelists, Dr. Carlene Stoskoff from SDSU, John Lloyd from CAHME, and John will explain more about that, and Nick Machione from San Diego County Health and Human Services. First, I'll start with Carlene. Dr. Carlene Stoskoff is the director of the San Diego State University Graduate School of Public Health. Dr. Stoskoff started her academic career at the Arnold School of Public Health at the University of South Carolina, where she spent 19 years. She became chair of the Department of Health Services Policy and Management in 1999 and served as director of doctoral programs from 1991. Dr. Stoskoff started two doctoral programs overseas, a PhD in the Republic of China and a Doctor of PhD in the Republic of South Korea. Her areas of research include access to and utilization of health services, patient outcomes, health insurance reform, and health disparities among vulnerable populations, such as those living with HIV/AIDS, the elderly, and the mentally ill, and African Americans. Prior to starting her academic career, Dr. Stoskoff spent 5 years in the U.S. Navy as an environmental health officer with the 3rd Marine Aircraft Wing in El Toro, California, and as the Chief of Preventive Medicine Service at the Naval Regional Medical Center in Okinawa, Japan. Dr. Stoskoff is a registered sanitarian with the State of California. Her credentials include a doctorate in science from Johns Hopkins University Bloomberg School of Public Health, Health Policy and Management, an MS from the University of Minnesota School of Public Health, Environmental Health, and a BS from Valparaiso University in Biology and Philosophy. Next is John Lloyd. John Lloyd serves as the President and CEO of the Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Management and Education, better known as CAHME, in Arlington, Virginia. The Commission oversees the accreditation of over 70 graduate programs offering graduate degrees in healthcare management in the United States and Canada. His role to assure through the accreditation process the preparation of outstanding leadership in the healthcare industry. In addition to his internal leadership, he worked with Whit Kiefer, and John maintained an active search practice built on 30 years of executive search consulting experience and the long-term relationships he developed with board members and senior executives. John has held key leading positions in the Association of Executive Search Consultants, including serving as chairman of the board of directors. He serves on the board of the University of Missouri-Columbia Health System. He also serves on the board of directors of the Circus World Museum in Barbaribo, Wisconsin. As part of his commitment to mentoring potential leaders in the healthcare industry, John is a regular lecturer to graduate students in health and medical management. He is a well-regarded speaker and author on executive topics such as leadership development and succession planning, and conducts national surveys of interest to senior healthcare leaders. John received his master's in business administration, a master's in science in public health in healthcare management, and a bachelor's of science in business administration from the University of Missouri in Columbia. And then last, we have Nick Machione. Nick is the director of the County of San Diego Health and Human Services Agency, overseeing an agency with an annual budget of more than $1.4 billion and a workforce of more than 5,000 employees. The Health and Human Services Agency provides a wide range of health and social services. They include programs to increase access to health care for those without health insurance, child and adult mental health services, welfare to work employment assistance programs to protect children and the elderly from abuse and neglect, alcohol and drug dependency treatment and prevention, immunizations, epidemiology, and other public health programs. Prior to working for San Diego County, Mr. Machione worked in the state of New Jersey as executive director of the Regional Health Planning Organization addressing infectious diseases in a large metropolitan region. Throughout his career, Mr. Machione and his staff have received numerous awards for developing nationally recognized health and social service reform initiatives. He is also the author of publications on health improvement and health information technology. Mr. Machione holds dual master's degrees from Columbia University and New York University in New York City, where he specializes in health services management and health policy. He is a fellow of the American College of Health Executives, having completed a three-year term as an elected regent for San Diego and Imperial Counties. He is a public health leader scholar with a Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and a Creating Healthier Communities Fellow with the American Hospital Association's Health Forum. His interests around partnerships with university has also led him to help develop and implement the University of California San Diego's first healthcare leadership and policy advocacy program. In addition, for the past 11 years, he has been an active faculty member in the San Diego State University Graduate School of Public Health, teaching both graduate and undergraduate students. As a tribute to his success as a healthcare executive, teacher, and mentor, in 2007, he was inducted by SDSU's Graduate School of Public Health as an honorary member of the Delta Omega of the Sigma Chapter, and appointed as the John J. Hanlon Executive Scholar, an endowed position created to bridge the worlds of healthcare practice and healthcare administration. So we have quite a panel here. And so first we're going to start with John Lloyd to give a brief presentation on healthcare management.
Thank you, April. I think with being such a small audience, I think we'd like to know who you are, because I think it would help us in terms of addressing some of your questions. Is that all right with you? I'm interested just in if you're in academe or what you currently do, and would you mind sharing that with us? Okay. Gary?
I'm Gary Feilerman. I want to talk to you about your governor. I chair the Department of Health Systems Administration at Georgetown.
Sagar. I'm a faculty member in the Department of Health Services Policy and Management at the University of South Carolina, and I'm director of the MHA Professional Format Program in the department.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Mel Valore, and I'm Commissioner of Health for the City of St. Louis Department of Public Health.
Oh, okay. Very good. Yes.
I'm Anu Manawala. I'm with the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey, and I'm in charge of the policy office. I work for an academic institution, but I'm not in the teaching.
Okay. Yes, ma'am?
My name is Samantha Perry. I am a population health fellow for University of Wisconsin-Madison, and I'm really here just to get more information because I'm kind of in the beginning of my career. I just graduated my master's in public health as a bachelor's degree.
Okay. Very good. And we're just introducing ourselves. The group is small.
Oh, perfect timing. Hi, I'm Laura Schwartz. I'm a medical anthropologist, a professor in New Mexico, co-located in our
Ah, very good. Welcome. Yes. Yes, sir.
I'm Darren Rausch, Health Officer and Director for the City of Greenfield Health Department, Metro Milwaukee, and a part-time faculty member at the UWM School of Nursing.
Okay. Very good. All right. Well, what we decided to do, just very briefly, and it really was epitomized last night, CAMI is what the letters spell, not commie. I try to make sure that people know the difference. Was basically created 40 years ago by the gentleman sitting on the front row here. Gary Feilerman started the original accreditation of our professional graduate programs in healthcare management. It had a different name. It was called AKISA at the time. And 5 years ago, the organization changed somewhat, but it really became the organization that, in addition to accrediting the graduate schools, basically has provided a link between the practitioner community and the academic community to talk about what do our potential employers want from our graduates. And so we thought we'd just give you a little bit of background, because our programs, many of them are in schools of public health, but not exclusively. That is, April said, we accredit more than 70, but approximately 40 of that 72, actually, at the moment, are in schools of public health and give a public health degree of some sort. So more than half, about 25% give MBA degrees, and then there are still a few freestanding MHA degrees, and I think, Gary, yours is actually in the School of Nursing, right? Right now it's Nursing and Health Studies. There, and so there are a variety of places, but in South Carolina, you're in School of Public Health, right?
That's right.
Right. Well, that was your, yes. Well, anyway, that's what CAMI is. But I'm going to give you just a little bit of a lead-in, I think. This was a quote that I wrote 20 years ago at the encouragement of Dr. Feilerman in a book called The Future of Consequence, which I wish we would republish, if we could figure out a way if to do. But it was really talking about the variety of varied health careers. This is certainly just as true today that in anybody who knows who's coming into this field, it's just as challenging in 1989 as it is 2008, as it was when I entered the field in graduate school in 1967. And so I still think, you know, it's a place where there is the healthcare management part of our industry is very exciting. We still draw, and I would tell you from the executive recruiter's point of view, some of the brightest people into this very complex industry. Let me tell you about CAMI. I just mentioned we accredit 72 programs in the United States and Canada. There are currently 10 programs in candidacy of what we think is probably about 120 graduate programs who say they have a healthcare management specialty. Some are MBAs, and some are other MPH programs who simply have decided, for unknown reasons, they may be CEF accredited, but they've chosen not to go the next step and get CAMI accreditation, because CAMI is a program accreditor rather than a school accreditor. We graduated in 2007 about 1,600 graduates. I mentioned they have many different degrees. That is not what is important to us. It's really the content of the curriculum content and how it's structured, and the the amount of data, or not just facts, but also learning that goes on in a variety of different ways. One measure of our success over the years is that if we took last year's U.S. News & World Report list of the 172 hospitals, best hospitals, and that's best in the eyes of U.S. News & World Report, after you take out the 31 MD CEOs, 58% of the remaining CEOs of that group of best hospitals have come from CAMI accredited program. And the same, almost the same statistic exists for the 30 largest systems. So, you know, in a sense, the CAMI accreditation traditionally, and I think when it was Dr. Feilerman started the program, really was focused on hospital administration. But of those 1,600 graduates today, only about 40% go into hospitals as their first job. Another 17% go into to physician practice management. A number go into various public health management roles like NICS, and a variety of other places, consulting and in the continue their academic studies and so forth. We put this up, and this sort of answers one of the questions. Well, we'll come back to this. It really, I was saying, well, what does it take to be a leader? And I had a chance in my career to interview over 4,000 people, and I had a chance to work with about 600 executives as they took new positions, all the way from CEO to CFO to directors of nursing to head of large group practices. I had a specialty in selecting the CEOs of children's hospitals, and so I really had a chance to say, what does it take to be a leader? And I think we can talk some more about this. You can read this. It was really a lead-in to this discussion this morning of where is the academic training of health managers going, and when CAMI was restructured, what we were hearing from the employer community is that they wanted the graduate programs and they challenged the graduate programs to develop stronger leaders. Therefore, the focus of the CAMI criteria for accreditation moved away from strictly curriculum content to really learning what it takes and surveying the field to say, what does it take to be a leader? And we'll talk about some of those leadership competencies, I'm sure, as we go through this morning. We also had a strong feeling that the professional field was challenging the methods of teaching and basically saying it's not good enough to stand in front of the millennial generation and lecture. It just doesn't work. There is a huge amount of other things that we have learned about how young adults learn now, and we're still trying to figure out how they can do three things at the same time. In fact, one of the faculty members named Dawn Ochin, I don't know if any of you know her, at the University of Central Florida, told me, she said, I break up my undergraduate classes in sections of 10 minutes. I do something different every 10 minutes because that's about the length of their attention span. You know, I think another thing that we felt that the practitioner community was saying to those of us who were in the accreditation business was that we need to be continually pushing ourselves and improving, and that's what accreditation is all about. It is not a punitive process. It is, in fact, a quality improvement process. And that finally we want to make sure, and this basically relates to a discussion Dr. Feilerman and I just were having, is not good enough just to be good business people, but they've got to be able to really understand quality management and their responsibility for the people who come into their system. And you asked the question, well, why do you need a program accreditor like this when you already have CEF, or in the business schools you have the AACSB? Well, we have felt, and I think when Gary started the program 40 years ago, this is our 40th anniversary, felt that there was a unique body of knowledge that needed to be beyond what was just public health or beyond what was just business, that needed to be conveyed. And I think just by the amount of interest, not only here in the United States and Canada, But one of the challenges that we face at CAMI is the number of inquiries we're now getting from international universities to asking how do we accredit not only Mexico, but in the Caribbean and in France. In fact, one of our commissioners is in France right now talking to a faculty this week about, you know, using our standards and can they get our accreditation. And we're not quite sure why, except that it relates to quality improvement. I put up here, why accreditation? And I think from our value point of view, we think that a professionally trained site visit team that always includes a practitioner, an academic, and then one other, could be practitioner or academic, that to challenge the program, that to meet these nationally recognized standards that have been developed by our commission. It provides validation of program quality to the public. And this, we feel, is probably one of the most significant values that we have, is that if you really feel institutional management is something you want to be really proficient at, you probably should go to an accredited CAMI school. And I had, you know, really a very, you know, sort of a sad discussion last night at the party, the Health Administration party, with two very, very, very sharp young ladies who are getting their master's in public health from two different schools, both with MPH degrees, both wanting to go into hospitals and basically feeling like that they were shut out. And they said, did you ever know about accreditation? And they said, we didn't know that our school was not accredited. And they, because so many of the entry-level jobs or fellowship jobs are going to people who come from CAMI-accredited schools. But anyway, that's just one of the things our board is aware of, so that, you know, we had over 100,000 hits to our website and finding out about accreditation. They immediately went to one of those 72 schools to find out about that school. And that's what we want. We'd rather have a million so that, you know, we don't get run into the young ladies like I ran into last night. I'm going to finish this up so you guys can talk here in a minute. You know, give me a microphone and I
That's
go
great.
Crazy.
You're doing great.
And on the program in school leadership is assured the quality of the program has relevant goals. We look at the mission of the university, we look at the mission of the school that the program is, and we also look very closely at what it is the program is telling us they're wanting to accomplish. And we basically provide to the university leadership the assurance that in fact this program, which they're offering and making available to the public, meets is in sync with their goals and really meets the needs of the future leadership. We validate the program improvement plans. We keep pushing and pushing and pushing on improvement, and we really provide an opportunity for collegial feedback. Now, how have the standards changed since I've been there 5 years? We basically have heard what the field is looking for. They want leadership competencies measured and taught. And we went through a 2-year process with a lot of feedback from the academic community, from the practitioner community, and changed 5 of about 40 standards or criteria. And they really deal with how does the program faculty prepare students, whether they be young students or mid-career students. We say, okay, what in your process have you done to decide on what competencies you're focusing on? What leadership competencies? And these 5 circles really represent that first the program has identified the competencies. They could be 10, they could be 26, which is basically the number supported by the National Center for Healthcare Leadership. But it's most important that the faculty, with input from the alumni and its advisory board, say, these are what we're focusing on. Is it leadership? Is it teamwork? Is it collaboration? Is it quality? Is it honesty? What is it? And then how are you evaluating the attainment of that competency? How are you using it as a basis for planning your curriculum, the courses, and how they're taught and what's taught? You're basically saying, okay, we want to structure a certain level of graduate achievement, and we do only accredit graduate programs at this point. And then finally, how do you then assess the teachers? in terms of their responsibility, taking responsibility for certain criteria and so forth. So that's the way accreditation is moved. I think that in terms of where we will, what we'll talk about in terms of your questions, April, really relate to where the accreditation, and I think that after maybe a little bit of a rocky start 5 years ago in terms of acceptance from the academic community, I think that we're with the very strong support of our employers moving more and more in that direction. So thanks.
Just because this is being recorded, so we want to make sure that it's on the microphone.
So I'm going to ask a few questions for our panelists, and then we can open the discussion to the group as well. So we came up with some of these questions. Some were very general, and some were a little more in-depth, and we felt like, you know, with these three healthcare experts in the field, they would have a lot to say based on the questions. So the first one is, what is health administration? What is your definition of health administration?
Well, what'd you take?
We'll start with a very general
question. I guess to me, when I think about health administration, or we use more the term health care management these days, is in fact that people have all of the basic skills and knowledge of management that you might traditionally think to get in a business school, the strategic planning, the quality improvement, and so forth. So they understand, have those skills and understand them. But what's unique to this field, and why I think it's important that it's separate from just straightforward management, is these individuals also understand the uniqueness of a healthcare setting and all the problems that come with that setting. And I recently had an unusual opportunity to talk to our business school people at San Diego State University, who called a meeting with us and said, we're really concerned because we have a small tract with you and a few people come over and take your classes, but we've had so many MBAs that have graduated from here who end up in healthcare, because we have to remember, what, it's 15% of our national domestic products. There's tons of jobs in healthcare management out there. So they end up there and they don't have the background, and they've been giving feedback to the business school that this is not a good situation, and in fact they wish they had understood these unique organizations with having third-party payers, and nurses work for the organizations but physicians don't, and the emergency nature of so many things and the life and death nature of these things. And so they don't really understand the setting and the terminology, the jargon that medical people use. And so I thought it was quite unusual. It's the first time in my now 20 years of experience in academics that the business school has called a meeting and said, we really need to talk more about how to get even our regular MBAs to have some understanding of the healthcare industry, because so many people end up there. And they come back saying, we really are not prepared for this setting. It has so many unique factors to it that we just don't know how to manage that in the same way we would if we were managing a straightforward industry that's not related to healthcare. So to me, it's the melding of those two disciplines in a way that allows people to be leaders, to recognize the uniqueness of the healthcare setting and its different values, and more of the emergency nature. And then, of course, none of us negotiates with a third-party payer to buy a hamburger. So, and no one wants to buy healthcare. Let's face it, we'd all much rather never get sick. So for all those unique reasons, it's the putting the management piece with it, the understanding of the uniqueness of the setting and all of their special accreditations and so forth.
Having transcend both worlds of academia and practice, from the practice, and depending what prism you look from it, you'll define it. But I think Carlene hit it on it, what really health administration. I describe health administration in terms of my organization as really that the central nervous system of an organization. I mean, this is where, as John pointed out, where strategic planning and financial planning, and more days, a lot of financial planning, where our economy's at, that sets the path for the organization. And, you know, and it's clear when you look at organizations, health departments, state commissions, et cetera, It's all the way from the top senior executive down to the frontline supervisor and in between that we define healthcare management. And it's the practice by which we govern, right, and we carry out our charge. But there was an article in American Public Health Association some many years ago, some of you may remember, that talked about what is a manager leader, and they talked about three roles, and I talk a lot about these three roles within my organization. They talked about Robin Hood, they talked about the Prince, and they talked about Don Quixote. And they said, you, as a healthcare manager, you're a little of all three, right? You are idealistic. We're in this profession to care and do good things for people, right? We're not here to, I tell my staff, we're not here to push paper or and as important as continuous improvement is, it's the bottom line is that we're improving the population's health if you're from public health or you're making a difference in patient care. And so that's very important, healthcare management, that you're part of that care team. And I think there's been over sometimes a disconnect, thinking, well, that's what the physicians do, and we do that. No, you're all together as a team on that. The second one, in terms of Robin Hood, we're really feeling it these days. And that is, you're constantly shifting resources, right? And you're taking from this grant, or you're taking from this line, or you're taking it from this pot. And my government colleagues know this well. And we got to balance. And so it's really having the understanding that we are allocating and balancing resources in order to carry out our public charge and create that public value, right? And then the Prince, read that everyone should do, the Machiavellian principles, and we'll talk about this, which I really appreciate Cammie's getting more into, and that is understanding by which I call it the soft skills. It's bridging theory with the ability of how to do the 30-second elevator speech with an elected official or your chief medical officer or a key stakeholder. Understanding political advocacy. Understanding the organizational behavior of how you can get people to follow you. And your charge. And so healthcare management is really all those three things. And you have to do them interchangeably, and they're happening every day at all levels of the organization.
Well, I'm just going to add a couple things to what I basically said. The subject of this particular was how do we look at the future of developing healthcare leaders from the academic point of view, and I think what Cammie has been transitioning to has been more listening to the practitioners and listening to what they need when someone walks out of graduate school the first day on the job, and they are more often the softer skills. The ability to work in a team, the ability to be collaborative, to understand how important integrity is and trust. And these softer, now that does not negate the fact, the other thing they say, we want somebody who has the ability to make a decision, to be analytical, to be able, after they analyze the situation, be able to present well in front of a group, to lead a team to a conclusion. And these are the things I think when I speak about competencies, these behavioral competencies that we are challenging the academic community to say, how are you doing that? The other comment I would make is that we selected the Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Management Education as the title of the accrediting organization, knowing that we are looking at the management skills, but also challenging certain of the programs to say, but you've also got to be able to say, we're not only training managers, we're training leaders. And there is a difference. It's very hard to define what that difference is. And oftentimes leadership is developed over a much longer time than you have when you're in an academic setting. But it's setting the stage so someone understands that it's not only budget doing budgets, it's being able to get someone to go along with you on a rocky road. So, as I say, April, that's where I come from is in definition of healthcare management.
Okay, great, thank you. And you, all three of you have touched on this next question, and I don't know if there's anything else that you want to expound on it. As far as Is the field of health administration changing, and if so, how? And you have talked about that. I mean, it seems like it is becoming a little, you know, it's more business-oriented. Do you want to share anything else about that?
This is my disclaimer of frustration with dealing with regulation, but healthcare is the most regulated industry, and I would venture and say 40 years ago that was probably true. It's even more true today. And one of the things that I know that Dr. Stoskoff has brought in for San Diego State, and I think it's been discussed even programs I've come from, and that is a more sophisticated understanding of public policy, law, and regulation. It is very difficult for me, even a new hire that comes from a healthcare management program, not to be surrounded and to think critically around public policy or regulation. And I think that holds true whether it's government or hospital or group physician practice. And so that is what I have seen, at least in the last two decades that I've been observing, is the increased regulation and the understanding by which how that influences your public charge, your mission, your operations, and the finances and with your staffing. And I think that it becomes difficult for some of our folks that come more from a classical program, and I'm speaking more of the past, that have not even been introduced to that understanding around public policy and think, well, that's the department, that's the strategy department, or that's the intergovernmental affairs department. And my response is, no, that's all of us. We have some people that may be analyzing bills, but that's all of us. And I still struggle with a massive group of managers. We have about 350. I still have some holdouts that think they do not need to analyze bills and regulations, and yet they're the subject matter experts at the front line. And so I would say that's been a trend that's really impacted the profession coming in.
In keeping with the idea that of leadership as being important, the other thing that we're trying to work as far as leadership skills with our health management people is that they really think about their role in advocacy. Because rather than, okay, here comes the policy and the bill and we're going to have to figure out how to respond to that, we also have to be advocates in the state to be sure that some of the laws and things that are written actually make sense for the environment in which they're being applied. Because I guarantee you there's a huge number of legislators, at least in this state, who probably really don't understand this industry, and it's very easy, you know, to make policies and things at that level. And so it really falls to the leadership of the healthcare managers and their staffs to work with legislators and be advocates for changes that make sense, or be advocates for, no, we don't want this law, this is going to be a real problem for us, and maybe you haven't thought about this implication. Because we have to assume that the people who ultimately who do those things are not practitioners, and they do miss some of the subtleties of the impact some of their new laws and policies, regulations are going to have.
April, I see a difference in a slightly different direction. And this is because, again, listening to practitioners and what they want. I think it's different in the sense that they are demanding more business skills. Now, the juxtaposition that's going on here is interesting in the sense that when we hear complaints from the potential employers, and this is, you know, taken back through our councils and commissions, it's that there's not enough analytical ability. They don't have the financial skills that are demanded to be the Robin Hood you're talking about, because it just takes it takes incredible. You're doing more with less, and you've got to figure it out. And yet on the other hand, the conflict that I see right now is that in the academic world, many of our programs are moving toward the public health schools, and what we hear there is that the public health graduates do not have a strong enough base in some of those. Now I'm putting under CEF. This is I'm not saying that at all about the public health programs that are CAMI accredited. Go ahead.
This is so true. Well, I think that for academic programs, and I was surprised to see that 40 of the 72 were in schools of public health. I thought it was probably more about 30. And we have some really unique problems, which is, our students who get an MPH do have to do the 5 core courses in public health because they're getting an MPH degree. And we managed in South Carolina, I defer to my colleague over there, Dr. Chirasagar, with CEF to get them out of one of those courses, but some schools weren't that lucky. It kind of depended upon the site visit. And it is hard because we also don't want to have students have to come into a 3-year curriculum, which in some ways you'd say, well, if we could only have them for a third year, we could maybe hammer some more of these things in. And so it becomes a balance of a reasonable length, enough skills in theory, enough opportunity to practice, enough time, you know. And so I don't really have an answer to that. I'm just telling you what some of the issues that come up as we discuss our programs. And they certainly do discuss them and how much is enough. And you want everybody to have a base in the management skills and understandings. And then we also want them to have time to practice. And we want them to be able to apply them to a unique setting. And the truth is, our program here is getting up to over 50 hours here at San Diego State. I know at Carolina you're at almost 60 hours in a 2-year period, meaning people have to go full-time in the summer to complete that program on time. I'm just saying that it is a challenge, and we're always trying to find the right balance between those things and keeping a program to a reasonable length of time so that students will come into it, because we do compete with plain old MBAs. You know, if we go too far out and have too long a process, then people are like, oh, I don't want to do 3 years. I'm just going to go over and get an MBA over wherever. So we do balance that, and we do want them to have good basis in these things, and we try to get that in, and then at the same time give them some practice experience in each of those courses. I think that's probably, but it is a balancing act, and it's probably never balanced perfectly. And from year to year, we make little adjustments. We go, well, maybe this wasn't right. You know, maybe we should put a little more back in this course of this. But the good news is that being an accredited program, it is looked at every year and assessed for its quality, because when you are an accredited program, you always have that little thing hanging over your head going, now, what are we doing? Are we doing this right? Are we assessing it? Are we looking at quality? Are we listening to our external stakeholders, people such as Nick Mascione and the hospital leaders here in town? So, and there are a lot here.
Just to add, perhaps it's a tightrope we can't balance. Every time I teach my graduate course in corporate strategy or organizational behavior, I always say, I wish I could have another, and Carlene knows this, I need just another semester, Carlene. I would really mold this group.
It would be great if you'll do it for free.
The students want to get out, but I talk about my own personal experience, is that I went to NYU and had Tony Kovner and got a lot of the strong management skills. But I felt I wasn't well-rounded in the public policy and the public health, and so pursued a second master's degree. This is a very, very complex industry, and it is, in my opinion, the best profession. But to really come into this, there is tremendous amount of knowledge you need to have. It may be unrealistic to think one program could provide everything, because we balance at San Diego State the Health Service Administration enough of the core that they can become effective managers, but allowing them to see the bigger picture of public health. And that, as Carlene said, it is a balancing act. But I think that's true in most programs, and we try not to exceed the number of credits and all these variables that go in. But I've told my students and said, look, if you really are, if you're, this is a lifelong learning experience. And I think we fool ourselves to think once you finish your master's, you're done. Okay? That's why we have also the American College of Healthcare Executives, so people can continue in their continuous education. And I think we need to continue to reinforce, and maybe I'm jumping on a question, but this is lifelong learning. And the strategies we've learned today will become outdated several years from today. And I think that's the point. But it's building character, I think, is the other piece when they're in graduate school, and having that mindset, and a lot of things that John talked about that are invaluable. As the CEO said to me, I want a mini-me. And I said to him, this is a very prominent CEO, I said, well, a mini-me may not be able to be achieved in the short order you want. You're going to have to invest
exactly.
in the mini-me on the job, and we'll talk about in the course of this morning some of the practice and internships and other things we do to supplement to try to accelerate the mini-me experience.
April, I'm going to make only one sort of actual factual point that I think is a change. I have an opportunity to meet with students around the country, and I think, and this is anecdotal, but we're going to begin to measure it, the increasing number of students are in a dual master's program. It's public health and business, or public or MHA JD. Many of our programs offer it, but it's the number that are taking the opportunity that seem to be increasing. And in about 2 or 3 years, I can tell you for sure if that's happening. But I just anecdotally, I was at Tulane a couple of weeks ago, and virtually all members of both first and second year class were there. And I would say to you, of 25% were in a dual master's process there.
Okay, great. Thank you. And this, you talked about this, and this will also lead to the future challenges that health administrators will face. Can you talk a little bit about that with some of the changes that are going to be coming up in the future?
Well, let's talk after next Tuesday.
I know. This is an opportune time to speculate that it may end up being that after Tuesday,
Well, it's good to look forward to changes, but they also require new skills and more resources, unfortunately. I think that, it's just a growing number of needs in this country. We all, of course, say healthcare is the primary need, but the fact is there are people in other disciplines. So we're constantly having to work and advocate for ensuring that we have resources. And I think I go back to that advocacy role, which is that we have to have a presence in Washington, and we have to do that very, very well. We have to train our people to be able to speak for themselves and say, this is why this funding is important. This is why this law is really important. So I think that need to be able to do that is going to grow, because the pie is getting divided amongst more and more people, and, well, I can't tell if it's shrinking or growing depending on how much money gets borrowed week to week, but nonetheless, there's we would all agree there's competition for resources, and I think that's a real challenge. And I think that, we're growing in areas of healthcare that require a lot more oversight and consideration of ethical values as we go into some of the things based on the Genome Project and things that we're going to have to work on for policies. And these things aren't going to get less. They're going to get more complicated as time goes on. So that's going to be a challenge as healthcare leaders have to figure out, again, probably a balance between what is acceptable in their community and what the scientific community knows and wants to do. And I think those challenges are going to grow even more in the future. So, and just the whole financing of healthcare. I mean, good heavens. When I started out in this field as a student at Johns Hopkins and I was wandering around, it was at like 9 or 10% of the gross domestic product, and now we're up to 15%, and we're the largest employer of women in the country. This is a really, really huge industry. And no matter who comes into power, it's not going to be simplified. None of these plans that our two presidential candidates have out on the table are going to simplify things. I think it goes back to also, as healthcare leaders, being able to adapt and change, to be able to read that environment and figure out what impact does that have on my organization and how am I going to respond to that. So we can never have people who are complacent. They have to be people who are ready to make change. And I think that goes to your comment about critical analysis, is they have to look at what's coming, figure out what's going to happen to them, how is that going to impact my organization, and be willing to lead the change to align the organization to that environment. And I think that's going to happen faster and quicker all the time. And this next year is going to be a real challenge, next couple of years. And even if either candidate does nothing, we were just facing all sorts of problems of how we cover the services that we provide, and that's not going to go away. It gets more expensive all the time. So adaptability, paying attention to ethics and aligning your organization with your community standards and norms, and that's different across the country in different places. So be able to read that with your stakeholders and adjust the organization is a really important skill for the future.
I'm going to answer it, and then I'm going to change your question. You know, the American College Healthcare Executives, their tagline is leaders who care.
Right.
And I think the future holds for healthcare administrators and the field is that for CAMI, it's developing leaders who will make positive change. And I think why I state that is I would flip the question and say, what are some of the future challenges for healthcare administrative graduates?
Yes,
because as the largest employer in this field in San Diego, we're slowing down. A couple of things. One, it is the economy. Two, all those great retirement plans are not there anymore. And so we are already seeing folks, administrators, some of which we were hoping they were going to retire, some which we were going to be saddened they were going to retire, but nonetheless, neither are they going to retire. So we're going to see some challenges in the job market. And you know, my role as the Hanlon Scholar at San Diego State is helping our students with job placement, mm-hmm. preparing them, helping make those connections. And even so, our large employers in town are slowing down. And I think we're going to see that across this country, that there's going to be less openings and it's going to be much more competitive for our graduates in getting jobs, which means... you know, are we thinking about other industries? You know, John talked about these emerging industries, and I don't know how we've been influencing biotech and some other industries, but we may want to consider these other industries that traditionally we really haven't bring into the fold because it's been primarily hospitals and clinics and public health and group practices.
Yeah.
But I think we might have to diversify that portfolio as we look at job advancement for our graduates because it's going to get more difficult in the near future. I think that will change, but we're looking at least another 3 to 5 years where this is going to be highly competitive, much more so than we've seen in the last decade. And John, I would be interested in what your predictions.
You're on the front line of the hiring and you know, as a big employer. I haven't, one of the criteria that basically some accreditors use is how long after graduation till we have the whole class in jobs. Up to this point, that has not been a problem. Up to now, your point is a real good one. I'll be much more attentive to listening to the program leadership to say how is it getting harder. And I think I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
But and by the way, there are one of the key thing here since our accreditation really changed 5 years ago to a more mission based. There are programs specifically Northwestern, Duke, Wharton, who Boston University, who specifically say we are educating for the pharma industry, for biotech, and for consulting. One of the four had in their Wall Street. I think they took that out. anyway.
But do you see these changes and challenges in health administration influence the way health administrators are taught and learn?
Arlene, question.
Well, I think we're always challenged with those people who are sort of without experience. Recently out of college, maybe you've done a job for a year or two and said, gee, if I really want to make money or something, I've got to go back and get a master's degree and I'd like to do health management. So they come in kind of green and kind of have some idea they might like to do this, but they really don't know the industry at all. The good ones are ones who at least, were admissions clerks or something in a hospital and come back and say at least they can spell hospital and they can spell, continuum of care. So they have some idea what those things are. But then we also have people who come back who have many years of experience but want that credential or feel that they are falling behind by not having an opportunity to stay on top of things. And so I think one of the things we're seeing in education change or trying to balance, and I think we can say that again by Dr. Chirasagar being here, she runs the professional format, which is separate from those students who are coming right out of college. And I know when I was at South Carolina, and I've only been gone a year, so I could remember this well, is how to, those are very different learning groups. And so we finally decided we needed a professional format and take those people aside. They pay more for it, but they also get to come to class at more convenient times and work with those individuals that have a vast amount of information and experience in, behind them in healthcare settings. Maybe they weren't managers, maybe they were clinicians or whatever. So that's one group of students, and then the other group are sort of these younger people who have this idea they'd like to work in this, and they tend to be very bright and very capable people, but they're very green, and you have a lot of other information you need to impart to them to bring them up to a certain level. So one of our challenges is how do you meet those two needs, and in South Carolina they've figured out a way to do that. I've been here a year, we haven't talked about doing professional, you know, a distance program at this point with this program. Well, I should say it's been tossed around, but we haven't seriously taken it under consideration at this point because it's, again, it's a huge resource problem for the university that you don't know you're going to get good return on necessarily. So it's a not a decision one would make quickly. But I'm aware that in our programs here after 1 year, in our classes, you are kind of struggling with those two groups mm-hmm. of people. And you want to meet the need of the mid-level practitioner. And that allows them to retool, get caught up with some of the changes that are going on that they've kind of missed in that time period. I don't know if we should do that with more certificates or whether they need to come, you know, some of them already have an MHA and they've already kind of hit their top left, you know, and they're looking for more training. And so from a higher education standpoint, again, it's like, which one of these are we going to do? We want to do it well, so you don't kind of want to be in everything. So we talk about this, you know, how much can we move in this direction without hurting maybe our standard program if we don't have a lot of resources? And just like health is facing in this state, higher education is facing huge cuts this year as well. So we have to use those resources wisely. But that is a problem for us, but it certainly is a direction we're going in, is how do you give that mid-level person the boost they need to become better equipped to face these new challenges.
I'll add a third, and I'm interested just to hear from the other programs that are represent the audience, and that's international students. I've had to, over the years, more and more forced into, which I think was wonderful for our students, but a comparative kind of conversation about healthcare management and the differences between healthcare management in France and Denmark and England, and the Canadian, South America. And that's because of the diversity of some of our students, which I think actually healthcare is global. And I think it's wonderful that we're able to introduce some of these elements, limited, but I think of necessity, in part because we had some of these international students that were kind of discovering the U.S. healthcare system, in addition to some of our students coming in that were learning it also kind of for the first time. So it was, you know, newness from different angles. I think the challenge, or maybe an opportunity for competitive advantage, is what CAMI's doing in terms of what you talked about in France, et cetera. And I think right. We are the leader in healthcare administration, not to be a snob factor, but I think it's being recognized globally. And that is where we can also continue growth into our programs. But I think we have to think about what do we offer to these other nations, and are we meeting their needs? Because obviously our programs are geared towards domestic, national, right?
I'd like to say that most of those students come and learn about our healthcare system. They are appalled. They're like, you do what? And this and that and everything. That's always their response, like, oh, my God. But the good news is we have a sample of every possible way you could do healthcare systems. We just have it in all different places. And I'm going to, since it's a small group, I'm going to make a plug. I hear there's a great new book coming out on comparative healthcare systems in March. And, you know, it might be an opportunity for our students to see that other places do organize themselves differently and sometimes actually have good outcomes.
You have to disclose now.
I disclose that I have an interest in that book as a co-author.
Again, just a little bit of a fact, and there's a factoid here. Of that 1,600 graduates, well, we're not absolutely sure, but it's somewhere between 35% and 40% are in that executive professional track. They're coming back after some experience. Some schools define it as little as 5 years, and some don't define it. But the number of people in CAMI accredited programs who are in that mid-career coming back is getting to be a fairly significant number. So, you know, I think when I went through, almost everyone was green, and there were very few people who had the experience. But now it's very different in terms of what we're seeing.
On the topic of research, how can research support help administrators to be more effective?
That's not my field.
Okay. We give a lot of lip service in public health to evidence-based learning and practice. We're not training people to be researchers. I must be very clear about that. Neither in Carolina nor here do they do work on faculty research projects or anything that are in this type of program. I think it's essential that these individuals we train are able to read and discern the evidence so that it gets implemented in their programs. And we do try to work at that, introducing them to some of the best practices and the whole idea of, okay, once you learn this, now what are you going to do? Some exercises and assignments where they have to think about changing the way programs are run to incorporate some new finding and so forth. But so we're always talking about evidence-based practice and evidence-based learning and how important it is to stay abreast of those things. And again, that goes to training leaders in the field, which is that they learn that they do have to read some of these things. They can't just, once they get their degree, you know, go home at night and curl up with a novel on, you know, they're going to have to read some of the journals, some of the things that will bring to the forefront, some of the changes that we know that are coming out of the scientific community that say, gee, if you do this, you're going to have this better outcome, and it's now established in the literature. So as leaders, they have to go back to their own organizations and say, are we incorporating this new knowledge into what we're doing in this area? And it's a lot. I mean, healthcare is so complex, but I think to go to meetings, to talk to you, to read your professional journals, to read some of the other things in public health, you've got to constantly have your antennae up, you know, looking for what's changing out there in the practice, in the clinical field, that we know that we have to be sure, because ultimately it's the leader of the organization who has to go out and ensure that everybody on down is getting hold of new information and incorporating it. And sometimes it calls for new resources. So that's when it comes back and falls on the administrator's lap and to say, oh yeah, that's a great thing to know that it does a wonderful job. And incidentally, it costs $2.5 million. But everybody has to have one. And, you know, and then we get back to doing decision making and management. But you have to listen to your docs, you have to read your material, you have to be out there at meetings and so forth to know what the new changes are in medicine and science and what other people are doing to incorporate them into their organizations and make them work.
Well, I would say that CAMI has always, from the very beginning, had one of the areas of criteria evaluation is, one, the quality and amount of research the faculty is doing, but secondarily, how is that research being translated in the classroom? And it even though we've talked a lot about the practitioner, we talked about the actual learning process, I would say that the CAMI focus on both individual faculty member research and the translation of that research, and then looking at the faculty as a whole. Not only do they do research, but they also, how do they do public service? Yeah. You know, it's not enough just to teach. And I think that it's what we have said, in accreditation of CAMI accreditation anyway, it's also what research do you do?
Say one quick thing. I have some faculty that over the years have looked askance at me. I said, you know what we really need for faculty in health management tracks? They need to do an internship every summer at a local healthcare organization so that they stay abreast of the management issues. Yeah. And of course, a lot of them look at me like, are you nuts? But there were several of them I would like to have taken out and put in a hospital for the summer and say, follow this manager around, because it's very hard. Sometimes you get kind of Well, I don't know. You get set in your ways after 20 years in faculty who are not as actively engaged in some of the research areas of access, utilization, outcomes, things are not as up to date. And so I would love to see us be able to place a couple of people every other summer. They have to go work for Nick for a while and get on top of some of the changes and things that are coming down, because how else do you pass it on to your students if you're not engaged in those things themselves?
I have, this one's a delight to talk about because I call it the corporate attention deficit disorder. It's more like system corporate. You know, when I talk to my faculty colleagues, they're knee-high in frontiers and healthcare management and all the periodicals and journals. But I talk about, did you read the A1 story in the local paper about such and such? And they said, no, I don't know what's going on. And this is a gross, I think I'm stretching it here, but I find that the faculty and so our students don't stay with current events. Now, the flip is, on the practitioners, we are hypersensitive to current events. We live in the fast-changing environment and don't take the time to read the periodic journals, to read the research, to take the time to partner with faculty. And so we have this kind of schism. And students are driven to the libraries of the internet and the periodical, and then they go to the job day one, and for most positions in healthcare management, the grim reality is they're not asked to read the frontiers in healthcare management. That might be on the CEO's table, yes. But what they're expected to know is no surprises, right, rising table. But we run by no surprises. You need to know what's going on in the markets today, and it's very rapid and it's very fast. So we have to look at what are those venues by which information is conveyed. And I don't have the answer, but I agree. I get frustrated because you need both. Mm-hmm. Okay, you need both. Faculty must teach graduate and undergraduates. Faculty must know about current events. Faculty must do some internship with real practitioners. Okay. On the opposite side, I wish there was the John Hanlon for every one of my executives. It's been invaluable for me to know which faculty to understand the connection between that community academic partnership that we've gained a lot from. But it's very difficult to maintain and achieve. And so I think I know Cammie's putting more emphasis on that, and I think that's going to continue to push us in that direction. But I think there is on both sides, if you will, including students, of how they use research challenges.
Well, and I think that to Nick's point, in one area that I have seen again in the transition of the last 5 years, the increasing number of executives or executives in residence programs in the various CAMI programs. And they really have added tremendous value in the sense of not only bridging the gap between faculty and the practitioner, but also, you know, you're really involved with the students. You have, as a manager of a very large organization, you know what's coming out. You have an ability to influence the faculty in terms of saying, hey, we got to do this different. I mean, they've got to have more of this because I know when they hit the ground the first day, they're going to need this.
What are the core competencies health administrators need now, and are there different competencies health administrators will need in the future?
This is going to sound odd, but for me, it's listening. I spend an enormous amount of time for our early careerists, but so mid and even some seniors, about effective listening. By the time you reached administration, you have a lot of the core knowledge on the subject matter. Mm-hmm. In some cases, their biggest Achilles heel is not understanding the information conveyed. And this hasn't been simulated in graduate school. And some of our students from undergrad to graduate haven't been, I hate to say, in the real world in jobs and understand about listening from multiple venues. You know, it's kind of overload, right? And being able to discern what is the message and effectively act on that. I can't begin to tell you the inefficiencies of people not interpreting the information correctly. and can that be taught? But, you know, in my strategy course, I carve out some time about strategies about communication, and we talk about the art of listening. That is a competency and a key challenge that I've seen and we still have that we work hard on.
Well, this goes back to, again, how things perhaps have changed for the accreditor in this case, where we basically are saying to the programs, you know, tell us what competencies, particularly the behavioral competencies, that you're focusing on, and basically, without any question, every single one have come back and said, yes, the whole spectrum of communication skills. How not only are they taught, but how are they practiced during the graduate experience, the graduate school experience? How many group presentations does a person have to get to make? I've been at several programs where the students themselves grade the presentation given by another one of the groups. Very effective. And then asking, well, to your point, what did you hear? Again, you say, well, that's not financial analysis, that's not quality, techniques in quality, that's not, but all of it gets to the issue of you got to take it in, you got to figure out what you're going to do with it, and then, you know, if you're a manager and leader, what are you going to do with it?
Okay, my last question is, describe any best practices in creating, improving, and maintaining a high-performance public health organization. Whew. How does higher education foster these best practices? We have about
15
more minutes.
I'm hoping we have time for the audience questions.
Yeah.
I think there's number of best practices, but I'll speak just to one, and that's that community academic partnership.
Yeah.
It's how you, and we've touched on this throughout this conversation. How do you bring and bridge the faculty, the administration, university administration, the students, the alumni, with the practitioners? And it's an art, it's a challenge, it's a lot of work. But I think there's a better experience for all that go through that. And again, in just 2 years and being involved in my current role, I can speak firsthand that been able to connect faculty to much more meaningful applied research locally that they would not have known because they haven't been able to make those connections. The local chapter for the American College Healthcare Executives, San Diego Organization of Healthcare Leaders, is called SOHL. Has a number of wonderful programs, and it initially was difficult to get faculty to come. Their evening programs, it's yet another hour and a half. They're going to be surrounded by their students, bugging them about an exam or such, and I said, well, it's important to be there, even if it's just symbolic, that we are a learning community, that we are an academic and community partnership, and we're experiencing that. And the very first action that Carlene, Dr. Stoskoff, did when she first came here. I don't think she even started officially in her job. And she came to an event, and that set the motion for the faculty and the community. It also brought in the CEOs, and we developed a CEO rounds, where we were able to bring the senior careerist with the early careerist together. And I think we've always thought it had to be between careerists, but the faculty play a critical role in there and listening to what the needs are. Mm-hmm. So it's focusing, I think that's a best practices, and that's something we're working on in San Diego, is this community academic partnership model with all the stakeholders and not just the select few.
We're also redoing our advisory board for the entire School of Public Health, but that's primarily practitioners to bring them into an advisory role, and we have a good share of them are leaders in health management, but we also have leaders in the other disciplines as well to come to that and to meet with our faculty. Not all faculty will come to all meetings, but to have topics and an opportunity for them to understand us better and as a school, as well as programs, so that they can be a guide sometimes to say, now this isn't the right thing that you're doing. It's not the right track. You need to consider refocusing. And so, I think we're really trying to work with that. The other thing is, and health management is especially good at this, although other departments in the school are as well. We have really good relationships with people who come in to be speakers. We have almost revolving doors of practitioners in every area, not just in health management, but especially in health management, where speakers from all over the county, whether they be in private settings, community clinics, physician practices, whatever, they're coming in. So students get some lecture material, but they also get to talk to people who actually work in that field, who then can say, okay, now you've learned all this, but what I'm working on today, or what my biggest issues are today, are this, this, and this. So it helps them to kind of think, okay, we know this about finance, and here are the big financial issues facing hospitals or facing HMOs, and, you know, because we consider insurers also healthcare organizations, and some of our students do go to insurance companies. So I think being sure that we bring practitioners into the academic experience, and I don't think we have a single class where there probably aren't at least 5 or 6 speakers per semester brought in. And in some cases, like the class that Nick has been running, that's the format. they're there every night. I know, because I go to some of them and meet some of the people in the community. It's important for all of public health. It's especially important, I think, for people who are doing leadership with communities. So.
Your question had to do with public health organizations, but I'm going to comment it as it relates to something very unique about the accreditor in this case, and then it basically supports what Carlene and Nick have said. We could not do what we do at CAMI without the incredible support of national organizations and large provider organizations. We are, unlike any other accreditor, CIFA, or anybody else, we receive 60% of our funding through 13 national professional societies, AHA, ACHE, MGMA, HFMA, and so forth. And provider organizations right here in the San Diego area, where we receive support from Scripps as well as from Premier, which is headquartered in La Jolla. And so they're saying this is very important. The connection between the practitioner community and what you do to assure academic quality is where we're willing to put our money where our mouth is.
And I'll add this for CAMI. Those people hold commissioner seats. So when we have a site visit, we have both an academician and a practitioner on the site visit. So that also helps to meld those two together, because they ask different questions on that site visit from different perspectives. So we're expected to be able to answer that for both perspectives.
Questions?
Okay. So that's in my questions, but does anyone here have any questions right now?
Well, we've obviously said it all.
Mm-hmm. And I'm a commissioner of public health. My degree has not been respected in public health.
Uh-huh.
And it has been a challenge for me. I spent, after the turbulent times of being the first-time female commissioner, I spent about 3 years trying to get into hospital administration. And yeah. Wonderful interviews in Chicago. I'm still a commissioner of health. So I've decided that there's a reason why I am in public health.
Right.
Because I do want to make a difference. And I care about the community. I hear you. I really do. And making lives, improving lives better for our community. So I've just recently become certified as a public health administrator. And I have the tenacity. And one of the things that I am not going to give up on is making that bridge.
Okay.
And it's refreshing to from you that it is possible in this world that I can make that bridge, because that's what I have been feeling, that, well, it's because you didn't start from college and go into a hospital healthcare setting. But what I have learned, the value, this is just not for myself, but anyone, and I'm sure you know this, that anyone that is working in tremendous amount of value that they can bring to the hospitals. Budgeting, we have no money, but we make those programs work. Reading those financial statements, because we have to, for because we're held accountable to our community. So I look forward to sharing my business card with all three of you, and hopefully I can bridge that gap into my next experience.
Let me add to that. That's wonderful, and we created, I helped create actually in San Diego a program that now is being replicated throughout the country, and it's called CEO Rounds. And it was bringing the CEOs together, CEO by CEO, once every 2 months at his or her organization, hosted by them, to talk about an issue that they wanted to talk about on leadership and healthcare management. I'm from public health. In part, I did that so that we can make sure we brought all the CEOs and the Health and Human Service Agency director on equal par. That has helped immensely with the executives. I absolutely can relate to what you're saying in terms of some misnomer, a myth, thinking that if you work for public health or state health or such, you don't have the stamina, the wherewithal to understand the complexes of the large budget of a hospital. I remind them that I'm one of their payers and that I absolutely understand because I pay them Medicaid. But I think that's, I've been seeing more and more of that being washed out, because you really can't today operate, be it a health department, a skilled nursing facility, or a large tertiary hospital, if you don't have sound financial management, operations management, the soft skills, etc. I think that the old school, the paradigm is shifting. And I think we're seeing that in the diversification of the American College of Healthcare Executives. Almost approaching half of the membership now are non-hospital. So Tom Dolan, Dr. Dolan talks about that. I think for us, we need to make sure that in all tracks, public health and alike, that we have success and the students we put in there, the leaders that come in, because at the end, that's what people are going to evaluate, and not so much whether you're a hospital CEO or a commissioner, is how well did you run your organization?
I think Southern California is probably a little bit more integrated between the private and public sectors, and it may be a reflection of the Medi-Cal program and some of the way funding is done. But I was very impressed coming to this community because of the CEO rounds. Some of those are with public agencies, you know, so it's okay. We're all in this together. In fact, the first one I went to has a presentation by your senior epidemiologist looking at how to reach out to children that should be in the SHIPS program, right? And they had did this wonderful mapping of other homes that were not there but did have children, and you know, and all the CEOs were there and were part. They were talking about this issue of reaching out and being sure these people get on the program, and it is of interest to them. You run the program in Health and Human Services as the payer of this service, but they have people show up if their kids are not properly qualified, then they're eating those losses, you know. So there is a huge, at least in California, I think, that's my observation, if they don't work together, all their organizations do more poorly than they did. I think in South Carolina it was a little, not quite so much the public and the private getting together at the level that I see here. So, and some of that is the direction of Nick, so.
Yes, ma'am?
Yes. My
to if they make a mistake. And I was bored that some of them were talking about protecting their friends. And I said, no, that's not what this is about. You know, we're all in this together, and we're talking about higher expectations and getting that philosophy across to them when they're in medical school, that it is okay to make a mistake, and it is okay to, you know, be there with your friends, but we have to start looking at also what happens when you make a mistake and you're an intern or something like that. So it's just something that I thought of in terms of this culture of low expectations. I think we all have to change that into a culture of higher expectations.
Very good.
Gary?
Well, a couple of zingers.
Uh-huh. I'm surprised.
As to what's changed, I think what's changed is the collapse of the gauze curtain between administration and the clinical environment.
Yeah.
That as that gauze curtain has disappeared and the centrality of responsibility for quality of care being the core issue here in all of this, is totally shared so that everybody in the organization, every management decision has a clinical outcome implication. There's no such thing as a non-clinical decision anywhere in the organization. The second issue has to do with values. And it seems to me that the critical issue of the relationship with the business schools is the underlying values. We have a crisis of values in this field today. And letting loose a bunch of MBAs with a bag of tricks and great tools and all this doesn't help the value issue one day.
Right.
And it has complicated the value question greatly. And that leads to the third point, which is about the nature of professionalism. What is a professional healthcare administrator? What do they bring to the table that's different from these other people? We need to do a much better job of worrying about that issue. The competencies, which are really a bunch of nonsense. Because you talk about evidence-based management, there is no evidence to support the relationship between the competency movement that CAMI's promoting, for example, and others, and results of practitioner behavior. There's zero evidence, and it's best exemplified by the most recent issue of the Journal of Health Administration and Education, which juxtaposes two articles. One is the case for competency, the other is the evidence from Yale study, doing follow-up. The case for competency is totally based on rhetoric and admonition. There's not a single data point in the entire long dissertation. The Yale article comes in and says, we tracked our students, we tracked our graduates, this is the actual feedback against competencies, and it shows that there's very little relationship, if any. Finally, as to the United States' role, I spent yesterday talking with people from Egypt and Turkey about their programs. Never occurred to me to suggest that they send anybody to the United States for development, either as an administrator or as a faculty member. This is not the Center for Health Administration Education. We have more programs than anybody else. But I can tell you that there are programs in Brazil, in Colombia, a lot of other places, 20 of them in Brazil, that would qualify for CAMI accreditation. There are programs in Australia and New Zealand, and all I did in talking about this development of the program in Hacettepe in Turkey was to talk about how they ought to be drawing people from Belgium and the UK. It never would occur to me to have them waste their time here learning about Medicare and Blue Cross.
No. I accept that it's comparative health delivery. I mean, you can also learn from other people's mistakes.
No, but it's the point about our being the center of competency in healthcare management and the place to learn. That's 30 years ago. The world has changed. There's hundreds of programs around the world that are very well developed, very competent, and equal anything in this country.
I don't think anyone will argue with you. Yeah, but on the other hand, why? We're being asked by at least six countries right now to provide them something maybe they don't have. Or we look at it a different way than they have looked at.
They're equal to us, and therefore they want to be accredited.
Who knows?
I can speak to students I've talked to, and it's a little different than your position. But the feedback I've gotten is this is one of the best countries to get their education around healthcare. Maybe they are coming to learn about our failures. So maybe that is true.
but on leadership and management. And the countries that primarily I'm talking about is India. I've had India, I've had in South America. So that hasn't been my experience. I haven't looked at it globally. That's not my area as a practitioner. But the feedback I got from students speak to that. Now, it's a testament from why are they still coming? I mean, you know, if that was true, we would see a drop-off of admissions, but we're not. We're seeing pretty much of an increase of admissions. So that's just an interesting phenomenon.
I've been in India, met with the leadership of the largest systems there, all of whom are building programs in India.
Yeah.
It's a matter of numbers. If they produce 500 graduates a year, that's a pimple.
Yeah, in
terms of my sense is that medical tourism is flourishing because they're getting their education in the United States and going back to their country. And that's both from, I think, a management and from a clinical medical school training.
Well, I think in defense, though, of the competency process, and I'm not arguing with the amount of data coming out of research that justifies it. All that I think we learned from the latter period of AKISA was that it needed to change. Something needed to change. There needed to be more practitioner input into the academic process so that the outcome was employable. And therefore, we're going to try this competency approach. And I agree with you. There needed to be side-by-side research studies done. In fact, I even proposed to several academics recently, okay, now let's look at the St. Louis University graduates from 1999 on and put them beside another comparable public health program graduate that has a health management, and let's see if there's a difference. Because they have been using the competency-based approach since 1999 in their graduate
school. I think in some ways the competencies are there as much for the faculty as anyone else. It allows the faculty to sit down and figure out what is it we want students to get out of this class and have to come to some consensus as a group about why we teach certain things in certain classes. I think the reason you see the research is such a huge component has to do with personality and leadership and how well they adapt to doing some of these other softer skills we talked about. But I think competencies, this approach in some ways helps faculty to think through their own teaching, which sometimes can be rambling, so we rather that it be prescribed. And so I think it might actually help the faculty maybe even more than the students, because as we've already said here, some of these softer skills are really important. But we also sit down and say, but there are certain things they need to know, and that's going to go in certain classes, so that they do leave, they do have a set of knowledge and a set of skills that's sort of the minimal expectation of being a manager. And so we kind of use competencies to help think about the curriculum and where things should be and how they flow as much as it probably is for the students. So.
Okay, so it's almost 5 after 12, and so we've gone over time, so we can adjourn.
Sudhak?
I don't know if my question is short enough, but I can give it a shot. I'll try to summarize as best as I can. There's no question that the extremely high escalating cost of healthcare that we are having sooner or later has to find some solution, and it is possible that some solutions are sort of evolving by default on the ground level, although we don't talk about it. One of them seems to be the development, the quiet development of a publicly funded, not socialist, publicly funded ambulatory care system that has almost doubled in recent years, so that this not-for-profit, public welfare committed sector is truly becoming a much bigger section, and I think it will achieve a bigger slice of the healthcare system in the years to come, just simply in order to take care of the needs of those who are uninsured and those who can't afford to pay and so on. For whom just now we are just scrambling and just sort of lamenting without any real solution. Now, in that context, Considering that this, like I'm talking basically of the community health centers, a number of county hospitals and others which are just trying to rise to the occasion, and this sector which has to be run not from a business model, but from a not-for-profit public welfare model, welfare not in the mean sense of the term that is often referred to by you know who, but a public welfare model. Now, this model, I think, really calls for a rethinking of the assumptions of the health administration education that has so far mostly drawn from business administration, which is oriented for industry management, for-profit management, and for being accountable to a different set of stakeholders than we have in public. I think this sort of got segued from the comment I don't hear it, and Nick's statement earlier. So my question is there a move, and I think there needs to be a move to sort of formalize and incorporate in health administration education a clear segment of nonprofit / government managing, whether it is human resource management, financial management, strategic management. All these are so different in the public sector, which they both have amply talked about, as compared to the very business model assumptions that drive most of the curriculum of healthcare administration. May not be by intent, but by practice, given the kind of textbooks, the kind of material that we academics have to draw upon, we still continue to teach at a very, underlying, subtle, assumptional level, we teach and talk and think business of healthcare, whereas we really need to be preparing for a good segment of our graduates who will be going into CEOs of these community health centers, CEOs like Nick and commissioners and so on. And I think, I don't think...
You've described the field of public health administration.
That's what you have, yeah.
Which is thriving in many places.
Yeah.
It's thriving, but I don't see that content in terms of specific techniques.
That is the content
administration.
Should be the content, I thought.
But it probably won't be
in all programs.
It won't be a CAMI accredited program, probably, unless that program sets out in its mission that is what we're going to prepare to do. It is very much up to the program to say, yes, we want the prospective students to know if they come to our program, they will be introduced to this nonprofit management, public health orientation, and not expect to go to hospitals. And I think that's more and more what we're seeing, because a program can't be all things to all people. You don't have enough hours. There's just no way.
Right.
And the same thing is, I'm hearing it in long-term care. There are very different expectations and challenges in long-term care that we need to be instructing. There need to be programs very much focused on long-term care. We don't have very many. So... thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. Nick, good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Carlene, thank you. Oh, it was my pleasure. Do you have time for lunch?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Nick.
Nice to meet you.
You were right, Carlene.
I didn't know you were the...
Definitely.
Been
on
and
on.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Good to see you, sir.
I knew that was fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's...
come and gather at my face.
Yeah, I need to do that, too.
I would like to call you about this program that I was in through UCSD. It was the Masters of Advanced Studies, and I don't think they're CAMI accredited.
Oh, no.
No, they are not.
We're the only ones south of UCLA.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering,
Long Beach.
Had they ever approached you? Had UCSD?
No, not to my knowledge.
So I need to contact Mr. Grace Miller and find out.
Yeah, I don't have a call. You
have
your yes, right, you have.
No, you don't. We don't need the competition, April.
all the
competition
is
good for us.
But some of the things that you said in your talk talked a lot about the program that I decided to choose just because it did relate to business and it did relate to healthcare.
Sure.
And we were able to tailor it. And plus, it had the hours. That was the thing. The hours were. I was full time, and I needed to be able to have someone that had flexible hours.
It goes back to programs can't be everything to all people.
That's right.
Pick and choose.
Regulatory push.
And so what we're going to do.
But I wished I had that MPH.
You're going to be Congress? Well, I see you in March in Congress.
Yes, I will be there.
Okay.
Anyway,
I'll be there. John, you know that Chris Binkwater is coming in. He's going to be the unofficially. Chris Binkwater is going to be the incoming chair.
Oh, sure. We do an MPH.
It's
not official.
Okay. Oh, that's great to know.
I mean, he hasn't, I gave him a letter of recommendation, and then there's a talking with Tom, and so
I don't know all the details
will be the second board chair on the West Coast, I think, since the history, or at least for a couple last decades.
I think I've heard the name. I could be right about that.